Welcome into Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're joined by National Scout Andy Spire. Andy, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, y'all's schedule's a little bit crazy this time of year, especially you're traveling and you're needing to be back here all at the same time. So what has the last month or so kind of included for you?
Over the last month, you know, we decided to kind of change things up and come to camp later. So, you know, I, at the beginning of August, started going into schools. I think I hit about 12 schools early, and it was nice, especially that first week of August. Nobody was even in there because everybody else was at training camp. Oh. So able to hit a lot of schools, knock them out early, and then come to camp, which is great because we actually get to see a lot of, you know, live practices now, and then actually see us play in a game, which normally we don't have. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. We had Hud on yesterday, who's obviously an area scout, and you've done that before in your career, I know. Can you explain to people what the difference between an area scout is and your role as a national scout?
So, you know, as an area scout, you have a particular area. It's a small portion of the country, and you're responsible for every player within that area.
Right.
You know, you're going to see a lot of draftable players, but also a lot of free agents. And as a national scout, I'm just kind of going over the top. So, you know, I've got everything west of the Mississippi, and I'll go in and I'll see all the players that we think are draftable. So, if the school has just a bunch of free agents, then I'm probably not going to go into that school.
Gotcha.
I'm going to see the ones that are draftable.
So it's another layer of scouting on top for the guys that are going to make it onto the draft board.
Yes, yes.
How is it different for you guys when you look at a team, and let's say that it's a team that's a lot of pieces away, if it's, you know, if the Buccaneers were in a situation where they needed a lot, versus now that they're a team that you can tell that they really have a lot of what they need, it might just be a little piece here or there. How does that change the way you maybe evaluate certain players or schools or the draft board in general?
I don't know if it necessarily changes it a whole lot. You know, we're still looking for good players that can come in and help us. You know, it's obviously easier if you're kind of set in certain positions, but you still have to look at everybody. And so, you know, I don't know if it necessarily changes it completely, but, you know, it's kind of an easier feeling when you're going into schools knowing, you know, we're okay here. You know, we're okay there.
You can be a little bit pickier.
Yes.
Well, one of the guys we were talking about, and you've got half of the nation west of the Mississippi, right? One of the guys we were talking about before coming on was Stevie Tuikolovatu, who I'm sure you looked at. And part of the flip side of what Casey was just talking about there, I know the Bucks and Jason and Dirk wanted to get bigger and more stout in the middle, so I'm sure that was something you had in mind when you were looking at him, right?
Yeah. You know, Stevie's an interesting story, and we've kind of gone over it, you know, quite a bit. You know, he graduate transferred from Utah. You know, he went out to USC, and, you know, his scholarship money wasn't going to start until the fall. So he's living in a car.
Yeah.
And really came on, you know, that year. You know, at Utah, he wasn't even a starter. You know, and that's kind of why he transferred. And, you know, they said, you know, you're not going to start this next year. And so Stevie's an interesting story, just kind of coming out of nowhere. And
yeah.
And
so if recruits want to make a big jump, they should go live in their car. Is that what we're learning here? That seems to help things a little bit.
I would recommend against that.
Yeah. But
I thought it was a positive part of the story that when he was asked about when he got here, you kind of expected to hear a sad story, and he said he and his wife had a great time. It was like one of a fun adventure in their life.
Yeah, no, and he's just a humble guy, you know, very determined, and you can see that out on the field, you know, how hard he plays, you know, how hard he works, and, you know, just, you know, what he does off the field just kind of goes along with what he does on the field as well.
You said you saw Kendall Beckwith as well?
Yes.
I know everybody here has been amazed that he was able to come back from his injury so fast. I imagine, in a way, that worked out kind of well for the Buccaneers. You probably would have given him a better grade than the third round if it wasn't for the injury, right?
Most definitely. You know, we saw a guy that's big, you know, physical. You know, he's got good speed. We saw a guy that can come in and play very quickly. And, you know, it's a shame that, you know, he had that ACL injury near the end of the season, but you know, the trainers down at LSU, Jack, you know, he's really good, and they the doctors do a great job with that ACL surgery. A lot of those guys come back pretty quickly, you know, quicker than you would expect. And, you know, we were fortunate to be able to get Kendall, especially in the third round, you know, great value there, and we think he can come in and be a big piece of our team.
I've heard a lot of people talking about how huge he is for his position in particular, that it wasn't even, you see it on paper, but until he got here and you walk next to him, and I've heard so many people just be like, this is a linebacker? Like, this guy's huge. Was that a big part of it for you when you get to go in person to these schools? Like, I'm sure you already knew his measurables, but did you have a similar reaction when you first saw him?
Yeah, and especially, you know, you want to get bigger, you know, especially against the run. And, you know, that's a big part of going into the schools is being able to see the players physically. And we see, you know, what their listed height, weight is, you know, and we get some of those numbers, you know, verified during the spring. But to be able to see the player up close and be able to see, you know, is it good weight, is it bad weight, you know, the definition on the player. And, you know, when you see a guy like that and that's you look at him, that's a guy I want. You know, he's going to make us bigger and help us against the run especially.
When you're giving a scouting report to Jason or coaches or whoever, do you include comparables in there, like to players they would know in the league? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Did you have a comparable for Jim? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if you can remember, if you had one for Beckwith.
I don't remember if I had one for him offhand. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we try to do when we're going in and looking at players. You know, who does this guy compare to that's in the league? And just so... when Jason, when John Spytek, Mike Beal, Dirk, yeah. When they read the reports, they can see that and go, oh, yeah, that's okay. Right. That's a good comparison.
That's interesting.
You know, hopefully we get a player of this caliber.
I don't think we have – I can't think of back in Buck recent history, I can't think of a comparable that kind of linebacker. We've always had more Levante David-sized guys.
That's interesting. How about Jeremy McNichols? He's been a guy that a lot of people have been very interested in. I know he was one of your guys you scouted as well. What was it about him that you guys thought he could come in and contribute, and how have you seen that he's been able to do some of that? I know he's been featured on Hard Knocks a lot, so a lot of people are very interested in him even more so now.
You know, Jeremy's done a good job. You know, he had the surgery, you know, following the season, and so, you know, he missed a lot of the OTAs and everything, but he's done a good job jumping in. You know, he's got good speed. He's got good vision. He catches the ball really well out of the backfield, and that's a huge thing. Is you know, he's going to contribute in the passing game, especially with his hands.
You can't really get on the field as a rookie running back, though, especially on third down, unless your pass protection is good. That's a good part of his scouting report as well, right?
That is a huge part. You know, they can have great hands, but if they can't protect, then you're going to be in trouble. So that's a huge part of being able to block and pass protection.
And how about Justin Evans? That was another guy you had on your scouting report, and obviously he was someone we were very high on to draft as highly as we did. And I know ball skills was one of the big things that they mentioned. Is that really the number one thing that drew you to him as well?
You know, ball skills, you know, he's a really good athlete. He's tough. He's physical. You know, he likes to hit people, and he is explosive. You know, he can close on the ball in the air. You know, he's a really talented player. We were real excited to get him as well. He can come in and contribute and help our team.
That's
how
awesome.
How many months or weeks, however you want to measure it, a year, are you on the road?
A lot.
I bet your wife would know the answer more even than you.
You know, I typically think it's somewhere around 150, 170 nights in a hotel during the year. We are gone a lot.
Racking up them hotel
when
points.
When I hear numbers like that, it makes it obvious for you and other people in your job how much you must love this profession and your job.
Yeah.
Because you have kids. I'm sure you'd like to see
them. I do. I've got three kids. And that's the tough part, you know, especially as they get older. You're missing some things at home, but I love what I do. It's great to be able to wake up in the morning and know, you know, I'm going to go look at football players. I'm going to evaluate guys and try to make us better.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Andy. We appreciate it. Good luck heading back out on the road. We still have two more segments. One's getting to your Twitter questions. Send those in using hashtag BucksLive, and we'll be right back.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucks!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucks!
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up!
Welcome back into Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite, Casey Phillips, and Scott Smith. We just had Andy Spire on, our national scout. He had some great insight. He had a lot of the draft picks this year. Just so happened that
when you're a national scout,
you have a bigger area.
And that's actually what I learned, and that explains why he looked at so many of our draft picks, is the national scout has such a big area compared to an area scout, but they don't go as deep. So it's more like wide rather than deep. So they sort of arrange the board, and a guy like Justin Evans is on it. Maybe some of his Texas A&M teammates who aren't as big of a deal, he doesn't go see. And he doesn't go see the littler schools around Texas A&M.
Right, which makes sense and is very interesting.
To me, that also probably means, all these scouts have to travel a lot and maybe drive from one school to another. Compared to an area scout, I would think he'd have to actually travel a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard him say, 150 to 170?
West of the Mississippi is a bit of a large area.
Yeah, I did ask him if he had to go up to Canada to see Anthony Eau Claire, and he said no, so at least he was spared that.
Yeah.
Not that going to Canada would be bad.
But that would be a whole other area, which would be crazy. Well, I think that is interesting to think about. Okay, so let's say you're an area scout, and so you're comparing all of the players just in that little area. And so one guy may look amazing, but it's maybe only compared to that area.
So. Yeah.
But if you're looking at only the guys that are potential draft picks, that gives you a whole other perspective on all these top-tier guys, and does he stand out as compared to other top-tier?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a both sides. Does he look good in his area and also compared to the national
And then you meld the two parts of the scouting report together.
So that's kind of an interesting thing.
There's also scouts in different area scouts cross-check each other. So you're seeing how many levels of scouting there is, which obviously makes sense because it's so important to identify. I mean, you were talking to him, to Andy, about the difference of scouting when you have a team that it appears to be now with the Buccaneers where there's not a lot of weaknesses. There's a lot more depth than there was a couple years ago when you needed a lot of everything.
Right.
The reason we're in that spot is it's because, like, the last three or four drafts with Jason Light have been very, very good. And we found a lot of starters. We found starters in the fourth round, fifth round. A lot of our guys have made it and are still with us. And that's how you end up with this kind of depth.
That's true. And I do think that that's a great point. And I think that it also speaks the fact that they changed their schedule this year on how they were doing it.
It's kind of cool that worked out, huh?
Yeah. And it's also interesting because it just shows that they are constantly looking for how they can do their job the best. That even though these drafts have gone great, they're not just going to rest on that and say, oh, well, this is how we've always done it. That they're constantly looking to how can we fix that? How can we improve things?
I think we heard from Mike Veal that they tweaked their scouting, their grading system just a little bit. So you're right. It's always a work in progress. And it shows us, I mean, those are smart guys up there. It shows their thinking. I mean, guys like John Spytek and Mike Veal, they're very sharp guys, and they're thinking about how to make the process better every year, even if it's already working really well.
That's true. All right, well, and today is the final day of training camp. Technically, training camp already broke. We just had some few more open practices, but for the open practice, people getting a chance to come out here, this is the final day.
It's the end of what we call we get to wear shorts to work. day.
I know, that's why it's so devastating for us. This is just a devastating time, a dark day around here, our final shorts day. But we are definitely going to get to your Twitter questions in the next segment after this. You can continue sending those in using hashtag BucksLive, because, again, this is our final one of these shows at these open practices, your last chance to kind of get in those type of training camp preseason questions on here. So for you, this last day, and then just knowing how this week is leading up to the game, what are the things that you've noticed maybe yesterday in practice or would be looking for today?
Well, what I think is interesting is identifying where the battles are still raging, where there's not been a decision made. For instance, yesterday somebody asked Dirk Cutter if Robert McLean has moved ahead of J.B. and Elliott in the nickelback competition, which I don't quite understand what the impetus of that question was, because J.B. and Elliott's
looking... He seems like he's been running with the starters. And,
well, they both have had their... Yeah. Maybe this particular media member saw a time when Robert McLean was running with the first team, but I've seen at least as much J.B. with the first team.
Right.
And J.B. had a nice day yesterday. Well, let me put it this way. Dirk often points out after practice that when we watch practice and we see a guy make like two plays that we notice, we tend to think he had a great practice.
Right.
Don't know that for sure.
He may have screwed up every other play and only made one great one. And we're like, oh, look at that.
I saw J.B. make a really nice play and almost get a pick in one-on-one in the red zone. And one-on-one is tough to defend.
That definitely favors the offense.
I saw him get a pick where he almost sort of ripped the ball away from the defender during a team drill. So at least those two plays were really good.
Yes, they were.
They're moving the ball. It's a move the ball drill.
Oh, move the ball, which is good. So, yeah, it did look like J.B. So what did Coach say to that question?
He said absolutely no decisions have been made there. I got to believe those guys are still neck and neck. So where else do we have those things? I would say at strong side linebacker, but it's not really true while Devontae Bond is in practice.
If he wasn't hurt, then you would say yes. Maybe kick return,
Kick return, punt return. I do think we have leaders in that spot. I mean, I think the competition part is, can a guy like Bernard Reedy or Bobo Wilson get a spot on the roster simply because of the return skills and maybe other things they do in special teams? And maybe we carry six receivers instead of five. I mean, honestly, there is a long snapper battle. You have to say there is, because we've got two of them.
It's a very challenging one for us to evaluate, I have a feeling. Unless there's an actual really bad snap, I think we're not going to have any idea how that one's panning out until they just end up cutting
one
of them.
We're going to find out that way.
Yeah.
And you know, the rest of it, I think, is just down the depth chart stuff. Who's your fifth receiver? Do you keep a sixth cornerback, and who is it? Or a fifth safety, and who is it? That kind of stuff.
So because it's not too many starting battles, and this week is primarily going to be starters playing most of the game, is it safe to say that we probably won't get a ton of clarity on a lot of those things this week, that it's really that final one that we're going to have to wait until then? And that's another reason why it's kind of great that these cuts have been moved back?
It's so obvious now that it seems like common sense they should have been doing it this way all along, because, your starters play into the third quarter, so then your second string comes in. You want them to get a little decent amount of looks, so you're not going to have a lot of time left at the end for the next group. And Coach Cutter said either yesterday or the day before, no, we're probably not going to be able to get everybody into this game. But in the fourth game, other than the starters who are held out, you will surely get everybody into that game.
Which is true. So of the starting battles, basically, in this game, what do you feel like is really the thing that you'll be watching to see if we start to get a little bit of that clarity of the few ones that we will see this week?
Well, I would. Again, I would start with the corner, with the nickelback job. With 2.5 or 2+ quarters of play, it would seem to me, and I don't know what the strategy is, that you have enough time to get both J.B. and Elliott, Robert McLean time with the first team. So maybe they'll split that time, and you could see something there.
That's true.
I kind of think you can't go wrong. I think they've liked the play of both of those guys.
Which is great.
McLean has a little bit more experience. He's been in the league a lot longer and has played in Mike Smith's defense. But what has J.B. and Elliott done wrong since he stepped into that spot last year?
Well, and I know they've talked about how they like that Robert McLean can play inside and outside. Do you think that almost gives J.B. and Elliott the leg up on that one, because then you could bring Robert in on anything?
Yeah, but you could still start Robert, and if you needed to move him to the outside, you could put J.B. in the nickel role.
That's true.
But I think it helps with both of their roster security, whether or not one of them or the other wins the job. It looks to me like a pretty good shot they're both going to be on the team.
That you would need both of them.
And you know if you're a cornerback and you're on the team, at some point you're going to play.
You're
going
to get
always go through all our cornerbacks.
That
happens
true.
Every year.
That's very true. All right, we still have one more segment coming up, which is going to be getting to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
Steps up, fires, and completes it to Humphreys. Humphreys still going inside the 20. throwing is Ryan. Ryan under pressure. He goes down. He's sacked at the 38-yard line. Wow, what a play. Empty backfield for Keenum. Looks to his right. Gets the pass. It's picked off. Intercepted at the 30. To the 25. To the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. The defense strikes first. A snap. Winston looks sideline by Fayrod toward the corner of the end zone. Caught ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Mike Evans takes it over the shoulder. From the 49. Play action fake on the inside. Daryl McCoy is going to wrap up Ryan and sack him at the 45. That is super quick, Daryl McCoy. There's the snap, and Winston dropping to look up pressure. Winston avoids it and rolls out to the right side, still looking. Still, he's back in his own end zone. Look out, Davis. Got a block. Winston running. Got a block again. He's still alive. Throws the ball downfield. He's got Mike Evans, and he goes and makes the catch at the 38-yard line. What a play by Jameis Winston. There's the snap. Breeze. Three steps back. You're low. The long ball. It is knocked away, and it's picked off. Picked off at the 29. Picked off by the Buccaneers. Vernon Hargreaves has his first career interception.
Welcome back into Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. Use that hashtag BucksLive to get those into us. And again, this is our final day of being out here at practice. This is it, the last open one. So this is the last chance to get in those type of questions.
Sad.
So sad. It's tragic. All right, Joseph wants to know, I think this is a great question. Do you think the exposure of Hard Knocks hurts the Bucks' chances of hiding a guy like Riley Bullitt on the practice squad?
Absolutely, yeah.
I was like, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a risk. Absolutely.
So I feel like, in general, are there guys that you already feel like could be those guys that we would be wanting to hide potentially?
There are almost certainly some guys that are on the bubble that if you were to ask Coach about him, he'll talk about them, but he's not going to bring them up.
Yeah.
And neither will anybody else. That's kind of the way team officials operate in training camp and the preseason. Nobody's going to lie or obfuscate, but they're not going to voluntarily bring up, and I am just randomly choosing a name because it's the first undrafted free agent I could think of because we were just talking about him, Jonathan Moxie. Let's say Jonathan Moxie's having an incredible training camp. Not likely to just randomly bring him up. I mean, I can't say that's true of everybody. I don't know exactly every guy's motivation, but I know that's been true in the past.
Okay.
So, yeah, you wonder if that, and it's not that somebody's going to see something on Hard Knocks that actually works as a scouting. You know, it's there's not enough they show, but it might alert somebody to that name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe every team in this league is going to have already scouted Riley Bullitt.
Right.
But this might make him go, maybe we should take another look.
Which is an interesting point. And
good
then
for him, though.
Around that same point, we also had Gerald ask us just straight up, is he going to make the team, Riley Bullitt?
Well, all I'll say, I don't know, but all I'll say is Coach was asked a question around that topic, not that directly, the other day, and he said he praised Riley for everything that he's doing, says when he's on his field, the field, he makes plays, but he just pointed out that it's a numbers game. If you count the guy, Eric Nzocha, saying that right?
Zocha. Yeah.
The our international exception who's going to be on the practice squad. If you count him, we got 10 linebackers here right now.
Right.
And we can't keep 10 linebackers.
Right.
Okay, it's really 9 because the other guy's going to be...
Right, he'll just be on
nine,
it and won't matter.
You can't keep 9 linebackers. You can't. Mm-hmm. The way coaches talked about it makes me believe their target number's 5, but I'm sure they would be willing to go to 6 if they need to keep a guy. But even then, if you go to 6, there's 3 guys that aren't going to make it. So I don't know which side Riley falls on. I'm just saying Coach said just keep in mind it's a numbers game. And as this team gets better depth, you're going to end up cutting more guys that you'd like to keep.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is the proverbial good problem to have.
That it is. It is a good problem to have, unless you're one of those 3 linebackers.
If they're talented players, they're going to make it in this league.
Yeah, they'll find it somewhere. That's true. All right, the Jimenez family, this isn't a question, but I love it. They said, I don't know if y'all watch Ballers on HBO. I actually have never watched it. I've been meaning to, so I need to get on this. But they said, the latest episode looks like they recreated the Mike Evans catch. So I thought that's kind of cool. So now I feel like I need to go watch this.
Deshaun was on that show, wasn't he? Deshaun Jackson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He was.
I haven't seen it, but I saw that little clip.
That made me realize that I needed to watch it.
Right.
You know, and I was like, oh man, I feel like I'm missing out on something. Also, I love The Rock, and we'll watch anything that.
Yeah, I was going to say there used to be a show a long time ago on HBO that was that seems to me that was similar. It was a sports agent, and it was called Arliss.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to watch it because I thought, wow, that's something I'd be very interested in. And it was just unbelievably annoying. It was a terrible show. I couldn't stand it. So
now it like ruined
you. So I
didn't
jump right on this Ballers experience. But if people tell me it's good, I'll start.
All right, we'll have to start.
And certainly. Dwayne Johnson is a more entertaining guy. I can't think of the name of the guy who played Arliss, but
Dwayne Johnson is more entertaining than anybody. I love him so much. All right. Lewis says he thinks that earlier when you were talking about asking if there'd been a linebacker that was like Kendall Beckwith in the Bucks history, he said Broderick Thomas was one of those big body linebackers.
That's
he
fair.
Said 6'3", 250.
That's fair, but a couple things here. First of all, I said in the relatively recent history. I was in my mind thinking back to about the mid-90s when we started with Derrick Brooks and so on. Broderick was drafted near the end of the 80s, and actually when he was drafted, we were still playing a 3-4 defense, and Broderick was more of a pass rusher than what you would than like a Sam linebacker. Now, he could do it both, and he had a couple really good years. Something great just happened. O.J. Howard with a touchdown.
Yeah, O.J. Howard with
everybody
a touchdown.
Everybody loves that one.
People get pretty excited when he does something around here. I can't imagine why.
But Broderick Thomas, that's a good. I'm not disputing that. He's right.
Okay.
I don't think Kendall Beckwith. Yeah, I guess he's that big.
Yeah,
he's
6'3",
250.
250.
Broderick was maybe just a teeny bit bigger.
A little bit bigger.
And he was
weight-wise.
A linebacker. It's a very good point. I'm not sure they're really all that comparable players, but yeah.
Joseph asked us. He's heard us talk a lot about two tight end sets. How much three tight end do you think we'll see this year? It looked like there was a bit of that in Jacksonville.
Yeah, two things I would say there. I would think most of the times your three tight ends is going to be in short yards and goal line. And that could be really a good weapon. If you take the two guys that we usually talk about, Howard and Brate, and throw in either Luke Stocker, who's going to give you great blocking, or Alan Cross, who can block, maybe move into the fullback spot, maybe go out for a pass. Yeah, I'm sure we have the three tight end. He saw it, so we do. And I think it's mostly for short yardage stuff. But considering the fact that you can put one of those guys in the backfield as sort of an H-back or a traditional fullback would give you some other ways to use that.
That's a position I've been interested in overall. Because of the fact that we don't technically have a fullback roster spot, that it's considered part of the tight end group now. Do you think that hurts an Alan Cross or Austin Johnson in their ability to make it or no?
No, because it really doesn't matter what we decide to call them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the coaching staff really cares if we were to call them a fullback or a tight end. You know, they know the role that they're looking for, and Alan Cross and Austin Johnson are here because they think they can fill that role. So it really doesn't matter what we call them. I think in his previous stops, which include New Orleans, I think Austin Johnson was a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like his body size or his talents have changed
when
he got here. We just have chosen to classify him as a tight end, but we brought him here because of the job we think he can do, or at least compete to be the guy to do it.
Well, do you see that he and Alan Cross are directly in competition with each other?
It seems like it. I hate to be definitive about that, but it seems like it.
Yeah. So do you think that it's one or the other of them basically is probably going to make it, or is there a scenario where they don't both make it?
That would be my guess, and I'm not a scout.
Right.
Yes, but that would be my
looking
guess.
Looking at the way that we've done that.
That they're kind of competing for the same sort of role.
Okay. And then John wanted to know, I feel like I haven't heard about Chris Godwin as much recently. Is he still looking amazing?
Well, you can read some of the stuff I wrote yesterday because I wrote about him.
Well, look at that.
But that's a good point. We're running out of time. Chris Godwin was, I felt like I was writing and tweeting about him every single day during the first week or so of camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, not so much for a while. And Coach did say, when asked about him yesterday, that he had a few quiet days. But Mike Evans is sidelined with a very minor thing right now, and Chris is getting tons of snaps, and all of a sudden he's showing up again. So
huge.
It's an idea what he's going to do for us in the regular season. If you don't have Mike Evans or Deshaun or Adam, or you just want to give him a break, he can play all the spots and produce.
And a great spot to have that kind of depth, which is awesome. All right, well, that's going to do it for us on Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. This is our final Training Camp Report Live. We're going to go back to our normal Bucks Live in the studio. Thanks for joining us. It has been a blast out here, and we will see you next time.